Welcome to an episode of the Wheelchair Roundtable, where real people share real stories, and together we crush stigmas one episode at a time. We are coming to you from Town Place Suites by Marriott Studio, located in the Rio Grande Valley in deep South Texas, the front line of the USA where Texas meets Mexico, separated by the Rio Grande River. I am your host, Rico, and riding shotgun is Mr. Hey, did he just say that? Roland Reyes.
He did.
And rounding out the team is the Quad Father. We're just two ATPs in a quad with a microphone, a mission, and a whole lot of passion. This podcast is about real people, real stories, and real power. Spotlighting life after injury, adaptive technology, and the voice is reshaping what it means to roll forward. Buckle up, because at this roundtable, we're not just talking, we're building a movement. Gentlemen, we've got some really good news here, man.
Some what?
Some really good news.
Yeah.
So we are now live together for the first time. It's Roland, myself, and the Quad Father in the same room, the very first episode of the podcast. And why? Because now we are sponsored by Town Place Suites Marriott. So we have a studio.
Well, Danny and I had never met.
Yeah.
We've
first
never
time.
Met.
This yeah. is the first time Danny yeah. and Roland meet.
Yeah. 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 And we just kept staring at each other.
So we want to say thank you to the owners for being so kind and letting us, you know, giving us a room to use.
Thank you to Priya and Hiran.
How'd you swing that, Danny?
Yeah, tell us about that.
So I know Priya from high school. We went to high school together, and her family, they own the Best Western there in Edinburgh, and now they have this place here, the Marriott, and it's been here. It's a new building, I don't know, a couple of years now, and I just asked, hey, do you know any place? Because she works for the Chamber of Commerce here in Edinburgh, and she offered this place, and I said, okay, awesome, let's go check it out.
Yeah, it's too good to be true, man. We're so blessed.
Yeah. Was this before he sent the text asking about, like, moving the show to a different location?
So when I saw that text about doing it at my place...
Was it already in the works before that?
No. Oh, okay. I thought about it, and I was like, we could, but I thought... I know there's places here that have setups or that we can use. Yeah. And so I reached out that afternoon and she said,
it's amazing. I can't wait to keep going.
Yeah, super excited.
Yeah. I mean, it's like official.
Yeah, it's official. And the next thing is we're going to do is video. So that'll be next. Coming. So you'll see all three.
I'm trying
of
to
us
lose later. Weight because the camera adds 10 pounds.
In my case, it adds 20. Sorry.
Well, that's the man right there. So for today, we have Jody Bennett. He is an awesome story. Yesterday on our pre-show call, he just amazed me with, you know, what he's overcome and what he's doing right now. There's also an aspect of his story that really is going to be touching. It's more of a, once you hear it, you'll know it. And I'm just so blessed and happy that you'll be able to share that with us. You and I know what we're talking about. So Jody, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Jody Bennett. As of yesterday morning, I became the vice president of the World Adaptive Boxing Council.
Right.
I'm on the board. Yeah, thank you guys. I'm on the board for Southern Nevada Adaptive Sports Foundation and currently the heavyweight champion of the world for wheelchair boxing for the heavyweight high level class. And I would like to say, listen, man, God is good. He blesses us in so many different ways. Your guys' story, you guys moving into this building, it sounds like a blessing, and I'm so thankful for that.
Thank you.
Yeah, man, it really is. All right, Jody, tell us. Take us from the beginning. Tell us your story.
All right, so... I'm going to start back a little ways because everybody asked me, why boxing? You know, I'm already in a wheelchair. Why do you want to get punched? Well,
dudes.
Exactly. That's pretty much it. But like when I was a little kid, me and my older brother, Cody, he's 2 years older than me. We were ruffians, grew up in a small town called Goldfield, Nevada, like 300 people in that town. And our oldest brother, he was, you know how older brothers are. He used to wrap our hands in towels and make us box in the living room. Ever since then, man, I've been in love with boxing. Pardon me. I've been in love with boxing. And when I was walking before my accident, I would fight anywhere, anyone, anytime, for any amount of money. It didn't matter. It was just a passion of mine. Yeah. And then back in 2013, I hit an antelope with my Harley. I'm going to touch on this one. I'll get a little in detail. So I was on my bike on my way to work out at Tonopah Test Range. And I remember I turned onto the Rocket Road. It's a road in the middle of nowhere. And I was heading down the road 4:30 a.m. I saw an antelope on the right side of me. And I had a feeling that antelope was going to run at me. So I slowed down. I was probably doing maybe 50. And I kept looking at it. And finally, it got to the point where I was like, all right, if it does run at me, it won't touch me. I'm clear. I opened that throttle up and I looked back at the highway. And the moment I looked at the highway, I hit the antelope that I didn't see on the left side of me. it was crossing to go be with the antelope on the right, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
I hit it. The antelope itself shoved my front end under the bike. I started to lose control, so I pulled over to the side of the road. And on the side of the road is really soft sand. I didn't really think about that. So as soon as I hit that soft sand, my front end sank into it. And then me and the bike endowed together. And I believe the sissy bar smacked me in the spine, and that's what caused the paralysis. And then the second rotation, the bike threw me about 15 feet ahead of it. I don't remember any of this. This is what the medics that were behind me on the way out to the test range told me they saw. They pulled over, and then they said that I was face down in the dirt in a praying position. And so they rolled me onto my back and straightened my body out. And I just remember the lights popping on at that moment. I remember I could see the sun starting to touch the mountaintops as it was coming up in the morning. And I could see like the people around me. And then I thought to myself, all right, I guess it's my time. I'm ready to go home. And then a really bright light. Sorry if I get a little bit teared up. This is kind of emotional for me.
I understand.
Then I saw a really, really, really bright light. And I just remember feeling comfort. Happy and joy, and I was like, that I know it was the light of heaven. I felt it, and I remember seeing big wings. They were I'll tell you right now, they were angels. They came down, and I don't know what anybody says about angels, but the ones that I saw weren't wearing robes. They were wearing armor. It was like a beautiful chest plate. It looked like I don't want to say shiny. It was like a steel chest plate, but I remember it had designs in it. And I was laying there and I looked up at that angel and I said, how come I don't feel any pain? And I remember the angel saying, because it's God's gift. And then I blacked out. I woke up again in the hospital there in Tonopah. And I remember seeing the doctor. Now this doctor, I believe his name was Dr. Scotia. He's been my doctor since I was born. It's a small town. So, you know, he had been that doctor my entire life. And I just remember looking at him and like seeing worry on his face. Then I blacked out. Apparently, my mom was in the room at the hospital and I was screaming, where's my bike? Where's my bike? So, you know, biker through and through. And I remember leaving that hospital, seeing the hospital in the rear view or in the mirrors of the ambulance. Then I blacked out again. And then I woke up on the airplane because I had to flight for life me to Vegas. It was either the airplane or the helicopter. I woke up on there and I couldn't see anything, but my nose was so itchy. And I kept trying to move because it was itchy. And then I kind of look over and I see what looks to be an angel tucking his wing. And he says, sorry about that, bud. We don't normally fly like this. It's kind of cramped in here. So, all right, I'm good. That's awesome. And then I blacked out again. And I come to in surgery. From what I understand, it was the surgery that they were doing on me to decompress my spine and to relieve the pressure off of my spinal cord. I remember sitting up and I could see doctor heads, like they had the little caps and everything. And then the room was lined with angels and they were singing and it was beautiful. And my grandma came to me, my dead grandma came to me and she said, Joe, God said, no, you're not allowed to come home yet. You got too much to do. I remember thinking, all right, okay. And then this woman came to me. Turns out it was my boss's mom. She came to me. I've never seen a picture of her. And I only know it was my boss's mom because when I did wake up, I was describing this woman to everybody. And my boss came and said that was her. She came to me and she said, tell my son that I love him and you're going to be okay. And it's all going to be okay. And then when I was walking, so a little bit of backtracking for you guys, when I was walking and my grandfather passed away, I remember sitting over his grave and thinking, you know, I'm kind of hell on wheels right now. So if I do end up dying, Tata, will you please come and usher me to heaven? So when I was waking up and I was coming to, my uncle was in front of me and I looked at him and he looked like my grandfather. And I said, Tata, is that you? And I remember him saying, no, it's Uncle Bobby. I was like, are you here to take me home? And then I hear my mom's voice, you ain't going nowhere, boy. I'm like, okay, I'm awake. All right, what happened? And then they told me what happened. And then they asked me if I was hungry. And I said, yes, I'm starving. And they say, well, what do you want to eat? And I shit you not, my first words was, I want antelope burger. Everybody started laughing. And I was like, well, did you guys at least get the antelope? Because I know if it broke me, I must have killed it. Did you guys get the antelope? Turns out NDOT, the Nevada Department of Transportation, got there before everybody could pick up the antelope. And I didn't even get to keep the thing.
Yeah.
So after that, you know, I was there for about 2 weeks. From what everybody said, I was in a good mood, you know, and I remember talking to the nurses and they said, don't worry. I told them, I said, don't worry. In 6 months, I'm going to be walking through these doors and say hi and thank you to everybody. And then they shipped me off to Craig Hospital. And I got to say, Craig Hospital is an amazing place. You know, they do a lot of amazing work. I've from my experience, again, this is 12 years ago, but my experience, they were awesome. Very awesome. Everybody there. I believe, Danny, you went to Craig Hospital, right?
Yeah, I was there in 2007, so a couple years before you were there.
Yeah.
Was it still connected to Swedish Hospital when you were there?
Yeah. It was all connected. And I think they were adding another wing that I think they were used to have. When I was there, you had to go out to the hotel rooms that were available. I think that they recently connected those now also.
For the family, is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, the people that don't know, there's apartments. It's about, what is it, about 4 or 5 stories high?
Yeah, something like that.
And it's for family of people that are at Craig or people that are coming back to Craig to do their reevaluations. And yeah. It's like they're just little mini apartments and they're all adapted for people in wheelchairs, for people that are coming back. I remember when, and probably the same for you, when you were getting ready to leave, those last 2 or 3 days you go over there and you're kind of on your own. So you can do the things that you've been practicing with your family before you head out.
Wow.
They never let me do that.
No?
Nah. I was probably because I wasn't really, I'll be honest with you, I didn't take it very seriously. I wish I would have taken it a lot more serious than I did, which if I could say one thing to anybody who's listening, you know, when something like this happens, even though you don't think that it's, even if it doesn't last very long, the stuff you learn, take it seriously, because I had a good 2 years afterwards relearning all of the things that they were trying to teach me.
It's a lot of things that you go through in that. You were there how long? 2 months? Yeah. Now I think it was there 3 months, basically. Yeah. It's every day. Did you have a schedule? Like, I'm sure you had like a team of people and they kind of scheduled every day for you.
Oh yeah. So it was first thing in the morning. They wake us up. They would take us. We had a class we had to go do. Then we'd go to one area and do some mat work where we transfer out of our chairs, get on the mat and try to learn how to sit up and everything and strengthening, core strengthening. And then I guarantee you, I'm going to give you some PTSD right now. And then we had to go down this really long hallway with a ramp down to where they do the TENS machines and everything. And then the first time they'll help you back up that ramp.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But after that, you're on your own. And I hated that ramp. Okay. Yeah. It was like when you first get injured and you're not strong enough, you haven't built those muscles. That thing is a mile long.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, dude, it was,
going up it is one thing. You're dying going up it, but going down,
terrifying.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
They teach you. Like one of the things they taught me was how to go down a ramp using your brakes to kind of like slow you down.
Sure.
And you better get it, because if not, you're gonna hit something. So yeah, it was one of those things that you're just like, do I need to go down that ramp or up that ramp today?
It was so bad. And then they would say, well, go up it backwards. Every time I went up it backwards, I felt like I was gonna slip out the front of my wheelchair.
Yeah, but that's the one thing that I remember about Craig is like, any little situation, they would try to put you in as many situations so you'd be ready when you were out there.
Almost, you would think they were messing with you, right?
Right. Yeah.
Almost like a company commander in the military. Almost. That's what you guys are describing.
Yeah.
Yeah. They got to prepare you for everything. Go ahead.
No, they would take you everywhere. Like, you got to know not just where you're at and you're working out, but everywhere outside. They would take you everywhere and you just had to kind of figure it out.
They would teach you one time how to jump up curbs and different levels of curbs, and then you got to figure it out.
Right.
And which was awesome. Wanted, like I said, that's the best way to learn.
Yeah. And if you wanted to have a friend or a family take you somewhere out of the hospital, they would have to kind of do it in front of the therapist. Like you had to pass the class, right? Do it in front of the therapist before you could go. If not, you couldn't go. So. Yeah, that was always fun.
And we went to Walmart. Like that was my favorite thing to do, was to go to Walmart, because it was only a quick little bus ride down and back. And like Craig, like Colorado, that area, that it's not Denver. It's
Englewood.
Yeah, Inglewood, just right outside of Denver. That area is so beautiful. And I got to go during summertime. So we went to check out a few things. And then I'm a big Raiders fan. I got to go see the Raiders play the Broncos at Broncos Stadium when I was there. Yeah.
So what they do is they will kind of ask people, like patients that are there, if they want to go on certain trips or whatever, and they get tickets. Somehow they get sponsored some tickets, and some of the games are like baseball games or football games. So my first football game ever was watching the Broncos.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that was mine too. Yeah.
And so they'll have some of the like the CNAs that work there,
yeah,
and they'll accompany you along with some of the therapists, and you all get like a little shuttle bus, right? And you all just got to go over there.
Yep.
That's gotta have been great.
Yeah. But I think that's one of the biggest things that helps is just getting you out there with everyone, right? Because I think a lot of people shy away from, you know, when you're in a wheelchair, you're just like, I don't belong at that, or I shouldn't be out there, blah, 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 right?
Yeah.
They just kind of give you every opportunity to go out there so you can get used to just being out there.
Trying to expose you to as much as possible.
Yeah.
Hey, well, in real life stuff.
Danny, Joe, let me ask you this question. When you were doing your training at Craig, were you already in a custom manual wheelchair? Is that what you all were training on?
I was in a borrowed custom chair.
But it was a custom chair?
Yeah.
For me, I was on an electric chair first before, because I wasn't very strong yet.
Yeah,
I remember. So I was on a tilt
chair, right.
And that's how I do my weight shifts initially. And then they didn't give me much time. They just said, "Okay, now you're ready for a manual wheelchair. Let's get you on there." And so
here we go.
Pretty quickly, I was on there, but it was about 2-3 weeks, and then it was just manual wheelchair after that.
Were they rigid wheelchairs or were they folding?
It was a rigid.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very good.
And they put me, I was in a neck brace and a chest, like a chest brace, a torso brace for, I want to say, almost a month. Almost the entire time I was there, the best feeling in the world was when they let me out of that thing.
Right. Yeah. When I was at the hospital before that, I had taken off the brace. But then when I went back there, they made me put that bad boy on. Hey, let me ask you, do you remember that little bridge that connected the East and the West Wing?
Yeah.
God, I love that place. One of my favorite things to do.
Dude, I got a lot of pictures from there still, yeah.
There's this bridge that connects the East to the West Wing, because there used to be a road that was under there, but it's been closed off since. And you would just chill there because the sunlight would come in. It's just a bridge of glass. And you had a direct spot at Pikes Peak. You would just chill out there and just watch Pikes Peak and then sunset. Yeah. It was nice.
Sounds like it.
They got mad at me one time because, like, underneath that bridge, that road that he's talking about, it's kind of a steep incline. From what I remember, it probably isn't that steep now that I think about it. But at the time, it was a really steep incline. And then one time, because I don't know why, but I feel like I wanted to prank everybody. And I was going down that road. I was like, I can't stop. Help. And then, oh my God, I saw one lady, she started chasing after me and she was so tiny. And so I got to the bottom and I started to slow down. And she's like, oh my God. I was like, ma'am, you are you're not even half of my weight. I appreciate it. But we both would have died if I was really in trouble. Well, they got so mad at me for that.
Yeah. Yeah. They were always on you about being careful out there. Was at that time, because I know at some point, you were talking about mat work earlier and all the crazy stuff they used to make us do, transfers or whatever. When I was there, it was on one of the wings, but at some point they moved it to the gym. When you were there, was it in the gym already?
So they did have a lot of work down the ramp where that big gym is. They had the tens, the bike there, I forget what it's called, the ABS
the FES
bike.
Bikes?
Yeah. Yeah, the FES bikes. They had a lot of the tens work down there, but in the beginning, they had a small gym right outside the rooms. So I would go out of my room and I'd go down the hall past the nurse's station. And then there was a big opening where they had a couple of workout equipment, but they had two other big mats that were elevated. And I remember I hated getting on the floor. Like, I refused to go down to the floor because trying to get off which I really wish I would have learned it, because it took me like 3 or 4 years to learn how to get off the floor by myself. When if I would have listened to those guys, I would have been just fine.
Yeah. Like I said, everything they put you in. I asked because that's where I got exposed to the, where the gym is. Because they had the gym, the Denver Harlequins, which is the quad rugby team. They used to practice there. And also the girls basketball team was there. They used to practice there. So we used to go out there and watch them play or practice. They never let us get in there, but yeah, it was right there.
That's where they had us do tennis. And that's where I found my ultimate hatred for wheelchair tennis was at Craig Hospital.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
So all right, the young lady who was teaching us tennis and her partner were both in sports chairs. I didn't know the difference. I was not allowed to have a sports chair. They never offered me one, and I didn't know that I needed a sports chair. So they were sitting there making it look easy, and then they're like, all right, Jody, you want to try? And me, I'm athletic. I love trying any sports. I'm like, sure, let me try it. I got my tennis racket in one hand, and then the lady serves it to me, and trying to push over there to get it, looking like a retard with my big chest. I look like a turtle because I got the chest plate on. I got my neck in a brace, and I'm trying to hit that stupid ball, and I can't barely move in that wheelchair. And it was like 20 minutes of me frustratingly trying to hit a ball. And I decided that, you know what? Maybe tennis isn't my sport. Yep. After that, I've never got on a tennis racket since. No, thank you.
Yeah. You mentioned having some struggles getting through therapy those 2 months.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate a little bit on that and what you think the reasons were, if it was maturity or, because do I know how old you are?
I'm 36. So,
36. I got, you are fairly, very young.
Yeah. I got injured 2 weeks before my 24th birthday.
Oh, okay.
I spent my 24th birthday in Querick Hospital. It was a little bit immaturity and denial. It was 100% denial. Yeah, I'm not even going to lie, because like I didn't want to learn it because I didn't think I would need it. And then like I ended up getting a pressure sore, so I was out for a week there. And then I'll tell you, you know, again, I was young. So it was, like I said, immaturity. So I was always goofing off and then not wanting to believe that this is my life now was something I had to go through. The moment that it really sunk in and I broke, I broke down in tears when I had to do my own bowel program. And that really broke me down to like, holy crap, I'm stuck like this.
Right.
Like I can't just get up and walk away. And after that, I started to do a little bit, like pay more attention to things. And that was like almost towards the end, you know what I mean? And
you could see it coming, like when you're getting ready towards the end, you know, it's like, oh, I need to do these things at home and I'm going to be by myself. And it starts to creep in.
Yeah.
I can imagine. Yeah. And it's scary because you're like, okay, when you realize that this is your new life and you realize, like, you sit down and you think to yourself, holy crap, I have to learn everything all over again. Everything. It really messes with, it messed with me. Like, I don't know about anybody else, but I got super depressed for a while. So when I got home, it was going into winter in my town. And Tonopah is really high elevation, so it doesn't get a lot of snow, but it gets so cold where I ain't trying to go outside. So I was stuck in the house all winter, and on the medication and, you know, trying to figure everything out myself and all the hardship. Like, I was so depressed. I'll tell you, I'm no doctor, so this isn't medical advice. But for me, the moment I started to get off all the medication, yeah, I feel a lot of pain to this day. But the moment I started to get off the medication, I started to get more accepting of my situation. And I learned that, you know, my family's here to help me. But I don't need my mom wiping my butt anymore. I'm an adult. So I have to get okay with that. I have to get used to that. And I have to overcome the fear of that. And then, you know, I don't know if you guys ever had to do a bowel program, but when I first had to do it, I was like, am I even a man? Mm-hmm. You know, right. I can't do the things that a man can do. I don't know if that's your guys' experience.
Yeah, no, I got to go through that every day. I can't do it myself. So I, you know, I have somebody to help me. It comes every morning to help me with that.
Yeah. And, you know, like it takes a lot, you know, you have it very much being in our situation and going through what all of us have gone through. You lose a lot of pride. You know, you become humble because before my accident, I was 10 foot tall and bulletproof. You know, I could do anything. And then losing the ability to walk, you're like, oh, wow. Okay, maybe I need to kind of take a step back and reevaluate myself and the people around me. And me personally, it took me about 2.5 years to really get a grasp on that. One of the things that did it for me was I bought a truck that was lifted, and when I went and picked it up, I needed help to get in it. And it sat in my driveway every day. I went out there and struggled to get into that thing. The day I was able to climb in it and drive away was that was the first day of the rest of my life.
Nice. What was the living situation upon leaving Craig? This is Roland.
So, thank you for the question. So when I got home, I rented a house. because I had some money saved up. So I rented a house, and the owners of the house let some construction workers come in and make everything accessible for me, which thank God they did. That was a godsend. It was so amazing. I'm so thankful for that. They let them come in, hardwood the floors, open all the doors, put a big ramp in. They made it very accessible for me. And then I had my mom living with me because she was helping me with everything. And the girl I was dating and her kids at the time were all living. We were all living together. And, that's one of the things at Craig. And one of the things I noticed is if you're dating somebody before paralysis, I gave this advice to a friend of mine. Be independent, because after paralysis, and they even said it at Craig, they said, do not become their caregiver. You or their spouse, don't become their caregiver, because you lose interest. And that's kind of what happened in that relationship. Yeah. And it is what it is. But so we were up there. Go ahead.
I said it was human nature.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, she didn't sign on for this. You know what I mean? She didn't sign on for it. And this is, and so like, I got no hard feelings towards her. But we were up there and I was living up there for about a year. And then the hospital up there closed down. And I was like, oh, well, I got to move. Came down to Vegas, and about 6 months into being in Vegas, I got a phone call from the basketball coach, John Foster. He's like, hey, I heard you're in a wheelchair. I was like, yeah. He's like, you like doing sports? I'm like, yeah. He's like, you want to come out and try basketball? I said, sure. And I went and started playing basketball. And that opened me up to the community and just sports in general. And man, ever since then, I caught fire with sports, okay? Like, athletics is a passion. All sports, even if, like, I'm not a big basketball person, but I like to go hang out with my friends. And if me and my friends can play some basketball, even better. And if me and my friends can play some basketball and whoop other teams, whee, that sounds like a good weekend for me.
It is.
Hey, Jody, how long did it take you to figure out that the wheelchair basketballs don't have any breaks?
The moment I tried to get into it and it rolled away, I was like, can somebody lock the brakes? Where are the brakes on this thing? Coach was like, oh no, just put it up against the wall. I'm like, all right, that sounds sketchy. I did, and that worked a lot easier once you put that's even to this day, that's how I get in my sports chair now. I put it up against something.
Smart. What position did have you playing?
I still don't know what position they have me playing.
Oh, they didn't know what level they rate. Your rate was like a 2 or 3?
Well, I'm a level 1.
Quick. Oh, you were? Just the 1?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Even in football, I'm level 1. So I'm paralyzed just below nipple line at the T6 vertebrae. So it's right on the cusp for quadriplegic. So I'm a high-level para. And so they in the beginning, they just kind of put me in the way. They said, just get in the way of people.
Yeah, I know. I know what that's like. I'm the wheelchair technician for the Vipers down here. And Danny plays on it. And he's T-bowed me a couple of times.
Yeah, they give me the ball. Since I'm the quad, I can just set picks and get in people's way and just piss them off. That's all I'm about.
It's so funny to do that too, right?
Yeah.
I had one lady just mad as heck because I kept picking her out. And like, I was so focused, I didn't hear my team yell release. Finally, she looks at me, she's like, they're yelling at you. I'm like, huh? What? Oh, shoot. Okay. Yeah. It's so funny. But like,
speaking of wheelchairs, Jody, when you left Craig, did you leave in a loner wheelchair, a sports wheelchair, a standard wheelchair?
So they gave me,
go ahead.
Give me a tie light, Aero T. Yeah. So they had a tech come in, and like right around the end of it, they had a tech come in and size me up, and then they made sure that it was ready for me to leave in.
And how soon after that did you receive your own after you left Craig?
Well, they made sure that my chair, so I got the wheelchair, I was in the loner for about a month-ish, the tech came in, sized me up, did everything, and then they had it for me, I think like about a week before I left, because they wanted to get me used to that chair. And then, yeah, I left with the chair, got home, and then I couldn't get another one for like 5 years.
Yeah, that's fair. That was very fast.
That's actually very impressive.
Yeah, that's super impressive.
That's one thing they do real well there is they make sure you've got your stuff before you leave.
Yeah. Everything. Dude, they had me on. They had my Medicaid taken care of. They had me on Social Security. Like, I didn't even have to fight for Social Security. They had me on that. They had everything ready for me. The advocates over there are amazing.
Yeah, just like to your hospital in Houston. Yep, for sure.
And while we're on track with the wheelchairs, tell us about your wheelchairs you use for sports and the differences. And it's not your daily, right? You don't use your daily.
No. Go ahead. So the wheelchair that I use, I'm not the one we have for football. I forget the name that they have on it, but it's a sports chair. I forget who makes it, but it's specially designed for football. Because again, football, I played for the Raiders also. Football is two-hand touch, but you got a bunch of fucking testosterone-fueled dudes on the concrete. We're going to hit each other, okay? So these ones are specially designed so that way there's a lot of hardware in the front so you don't break nothing and you could actually whack people. And our axles are so thick for those on the football chairs. So right, basketball chairs, yeah. Yeah, basketball chairs are usually like the football chairs, a little bit lighter, but they have thinner axles. Honestly, the thing is you can get your sports chairs usually designed for more sports. Now, since we're talking about sports chairs, here with the WABC, Colin over there in England, he's designed a new sports chair. It doesn't have the camper that most of the basketball and football chairs do, but it's designed to go on grass. The way he's got the casters in the front and the casters in the back, along with the camper that it has, it's completely designed to go on grass. I've tried it. I love it. It's a lot of fun. I'm going to have a video when he brings one to the US. I'm going to have a video of us doing some activities on grass with it. But this one, each chair, this one's kind of designed specifically for boxing, for wheelchair rugby on grass, and then for wheelchair soccer, or as the Brits say, football. Yeah. So, it's designed for that. Yeah, go ahead.
I want to do right by you. Let's go ahead and start your whole sports experience. And yesterday when we were talking, you had a quote that I want you to touch a little bit on it. And you said, "I don't let the wheels hold me back." And yeah, when you said that, that really touched me. So can you touch on that and just go ahead and talk to us about how important, you know, the leagues you're playing in? They're just not your standard rec leagues. These are professional leagues that you play in, correct?
Yeah, well, so because we don't get paid, it's not professional. It's semi-pro or amateur.
Gotcha.
If for boxing, if we can get the sponsorships for that and we can start getting our athletes paid, then we're going to be a professional level. But we are for football, it's an elite level. We go through Move United. Like I was telling you guys before, the wheels will never hold me back. The wheelchair will never hold me back. It's just now I get to do it in a different way. Like I told you guys yesterday, is I consider myself very blessed to be in a wheelchair. When I broke my back, I was working. I had some prospects. I was going to go into the military. I wanted to be a Green Beret. You know, the day I broke my back, everything changed. You know what I mean? And I thought that I couldn't do a lot of these things. And then I realized that sports came into my life and I can do anything. Just because I got wheels don't mean I can't. That does not mean I can't do it. Anything. It's all possible, especially with what we're doing now with the different sports that are coming along. Again, I'm going back to boxing because boxing's my passion. I thought that I would never box again. I thought that I would never fight again. For one, it's not a sport. And for two, nobody wants to punch a guy in a wheelchair. Hardly enough.
I've met some guys in wheelchairs that I want to punch.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to say anything. But
well, most people don't, all right? But that's the thing. Just because I got wheels don't mean you're going to stop me.
And that's beautiful. I love it.
It's a
mindset. For sure.
100%. And you got to have something worth fighting for. My daughter, I broke my back when she was 2 years old. She doesn't know anything other than the wheelchair. You know, I got custody of her back and she saw me in the chair and I looked at her and I remember thinking two things. One, I'm the example of a good man, so I have to become a great man. And two, I can never let my daughter see me quit or not be able to do something. I have to do it. And I have to show her that no matter what, she can do it. She can see me go through all this hell being in a chair. When she gets older and goes through all these troubles that I may not be around for, she's going to have something to look back and be like, dude, my dad in a wheelchair did great things. I can do this. That's why I do everything that I do.
What's your daughter's name, man?
Her name's Alicia. Alicia Denise.
Alicia Beautiful Denise. Name. Hi, Absolutely. Alicia Denise, if Hello. You're listening.
She's on her Xbox talking to her boyfriend, okay?
Oh, okay. I was going to ask, out of curiosity, what kind of, I don't know, permission maybe, or when you know, you're talking to your doctor, your healthcare provider, he's like, I want to box. What did they tell you? Or was there any, we probably shouldn't, you just said, I'm going to do it.
Good question.
So my doctor, my healthcare provider, I've been with for 12 years. As soon as I moved to Vegas, so 10 years. As soon as I moved to Vegas, I went with them and I've been with them ever since. And they've learned that I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do. And I hope that you guys will help me do it safely. If not, you're going to have to fix me when I come home broken. And my doctor is really cool about it. Like, me and my doctor, we actually have a personal relationship. Our daughters are really good friends. So my doctor sees me do all the dumb shit I do anyways. And she comes out and supports me with it. You know, with basketball, she comes out and supports the basketball team. And, you know, the whole doctor's office, they donated to my GoFundMe to send me to England to go get beat up by a Frenchman. Okay. That's how awesome my doctors are. And, you know, it took a long time to build that relationship. And I'm very thankful. Dr. Lada's office and Charmaine Coronado is my doctor. I got to give a big shout out to them because they always make sure that I'm safe. They let me do it because they know they can't stop me. So they make sure that I'm safe doing it. Even if it comes with a 45-minute lecture on how I need a CTE and be in a wheelchair. So I'll be in a wheelchair and stupid. I don't know, Doc. I don't know if I get much dumber. I'm going to go get punched willingly.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Hey, Jody, I'm very interested. Talk to us about how this football league works. Because I'm looking at it right here, and I know there's teams in Birmingham. There's the New England Patriots, the Buffalo Bills, the Chicago Bears.
Absolutely. I hope your listeners are paying attention because I've been a couple of people have reached out to me about wheelchair sports that are new injuries. So Move United puts on wheelchair football. It was through them. They have a direct relationship with the NFL. Again, I'm not an expert on that end of it, but this is just what I know of it. They have a direct relationship with the NFL. Now for us, the Las Vegas Raiders, we have a great relationship due to our staff. They keep us in touch with our NFL team. Our NFL, like, they bring us out to events. Some of the players come and get in chairs with us and will push around the gym with us in our practice. So Move United is working with the NFL. It was a veteran sport, but then a few years ago, they opened it up to not just veterans, but to all disabled people. And, you know, the way it works is I think there's 15 teams. They might have added two more this year, but they're adding teams every year so that way we can have awesome tournaments. Right now, I missed this last tournament because I was coming back from my fight in England. Next October 17th through the 19th in Kansas City, there's a big football tournament. We all fly out there. And then usually how it works is we leave at the butt crack of dawn Friday morning, which I feel like our coaches do this just to see, just to kind of mess with us, all right? Because we could leave the day before, but no, it's got to be Friday at 4 o'clock in the morning. So we leave, we fly out. There's a dinner there. Sorry, I'm ADHD, guys. I don't know if you can tell. So we leave, we fly out.
I'm telling you that.
What's that?
I said me too.
Yeah. Oh, so you're able to keep up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm keeping up.
Awesome.
I'm
awesome.
Medicated today.
Bro, I'm not. I should be. Anyway, all right. So we're going to land in Kansas City. We do a big team dinner where all the teams come. We meet up, we shake hands, talk a little smack, have a little fun. And then the next day we all, like, usually for some reason, I don't know why they do this to us. We're on the West Coast, right? They usually schedule our first game at 8 a.m., which 8 a.m. over here at 8 a.m. in Kansas City is like 4 a.m. here. I'm not, maybe not, like 5 a.m. here. Okay. So that's not like it's, again, I think they're doing it just to mess with us. But then we have multiple games on Saturday. And depending on if we win or lose, we go to the bracket on Sunday. And we'll, like, if we win all of our games on Saturday, we usually have two games on Sunday. We have the playoff and then the tournament championship game on Sunday. And if we don't win, then I don't know how they do the brackets, if I'm being completely honest with you. I've never paid attention to it. I just show up and kick butt. All right,
Jody. So it's 7-on-7 on 80-yard by 45-yard field. Is that the way it works?
Yeah, and so we are a 7-man team. I do. I play center. It's a 7-man team. And then the way it works is really cool because with 7-man football, it's usually really, really fast paced, right? Smaller field, smaller teams. You got a lot, and the 7-man footballs in able body, you usually have a higher scoring teams, yes, which is cool. For wheelchair football, what I love about it is in seven-man football, everybody is eligible receiver. So a lot of times you'll see the centers or the tight ends leak out and receive balls for a good 5-10 yards. You know, so it's really awesome in that sense. However, it sucks too, because if you're a lineman and you're going out for a pass, you catch it, you got some receiver from across the field doing 90 miles an hour to touch you. Yeah.
Are y'all on artificial turf generally or natural grass?
Nah. We play on asphalt, bud, or hardwood. Yeah.
I was wondering, man. I was wondering.
To paint a picture to the listeners, he's in a helmet. Do you have shoulder pads on? I know you have a helmet.
No, just the helmet. No shoulder pads, helmet and shorts. Yeah.
It's street ball, dude.
Caveman ball?
Yeah, pretty much. That's what, wheelchair sports, you gotta love getting hit. I don't care. Even in basketball is supposed to be a non-contact sport, not the way we play.
Yeah.
Okay, you gotta be ready, willing, and gotta have a love for it. And come on out, tell everybody, come out and at least try it. Wherever you guys are, where your listeners, male, female, we have girls on the team that one of my best friends, her name's Bea. She's so fast and she's a good receiver. Like, girls, come out and play with us. It's open to everybody.
What do you think makes someone fast in a wheelchair in an activity like that? So I guess like a para with a strong upper body is going to do well speed wise.
Yeah. So you have, I'm a high level. I got big arms and I got a lot of weight behind me. For me to pick up speed, I have to rock my body so I can get that. I can throw my weight into it. A lot of low level paras and a lot of amputees that are in chairs, they're able to use their core to get that speed. So most low-level paras and amputees are a lot faster and better chair skills because they're able to work their core. But that won't stop you, because even a high-level para, you can train. I train every day. I've been training for boxing, but when I train for football, I'm training for speed. Boxing has raised my 40. I was doing a 40-yard dash. I think my 40 was last year was 12 seconds, 12.8 seconds on a 40. This year, because of how I was training, I got mine down to 10.2 seconds.
Nice.
So it's all about how you train, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. When we're playing basketball, the taking off isn't the hard part. It's stopping for me.
Turning.
Tough. Turning, yeah, I can turn better one way than the other, but I have a hard time stopping.
Yeah, because you got to really grip those. And I don't like, and you have different ways, dude, because some people use the tires. I hate touching my tires. It just makes my hands feel gross. So you really got to grip those rims.
How busted up do your hands get playing? Because I'd imagine playing on that gravel, I mean, it's just going to mess you up pretty good sometimes.
But it's not gravel, it's asphalt.
Asphalt,
or sometimes we get bougie and we get to play in these real big gym facilities.
Oh, yeah, got you.
Yeah, so depending on where we are, like when we do our home tournaments, we play in a big parking lot downtown. They let us use a parking lot, so we're playing on parking lot. Your hands don't really get too bad. They just get really dirty and black and gross.
I had a question. Since you're always out and about doing these tournaments, do you just take the chair that you're going to compete in when you're traveling, or do you take both chairs? Because I'd imagine, if it were me, I'd probably just take the chair I'm going to compete in, because I'd probably get in and out of it anywhere anyway.
So I'll give you an example. What I do is different for each thing. So football, I take my personal chair, and then usually our staff is really good at handling our sports chairs. When I went to England for my boxing tournament, my girl came with me and came in clutch, because she did the luggage, I did the chairs, and we just packed everything onto my sports chair, and then I tied it onto my everyday chair, and it was kind of like a train going everywhere, right? You know what I mean? I pulled the chair behind me and all the heavy stuff went on it. So that's kind of how I do it. But with like the football coaches, they make sure that the chairs get to the airport once the sports chairs, because the sports chairs all go underneath the plane. We check the chairs, medical equipment. Then when we land, depending on if we have to change or whatever we have to do, a lot of times there's a U-Haul that they have there for us. Dude, these guys really do us justice, okay? A lot of times they have a U-Haul for football. They have a U-Haul ready there for us at the airport. We load up our sport. We go down, check, get our sports chairs, load them up in the U-Haul, and then they bus us to our hotel. For basketball, because we're such a small basketball team, we kind of got to do everything ourselves, which again, I just tie the chair to the back of my everyday chair and I push through.
Nice. So I'm looking at the website right now. The NFL is doing a fantastic job supporting you guys.
Yeah,
so you got a team in the Birmingham Hammers. You got the New England Patriots wheelchair football team, the Buffalo Bills, the Chicago Bears, the Cleveland Browns, the Dallas Outlaws, Green Bay Packers, Kansas City Smoke, Las Vegas Raiders, Go Raiders.
Go Raiders.
The Rams, the Saints, the Cardinals, and the Bucks. So this is a pretty well-organized association y'all have with the NFL.
Dude, like I said, the NFL does really, really good backing us. I can't say for the other teams. I can just say that our relationship with the Raiders and our team, dude, they are amazing to us. They support us 100%. And I got to say, like, I don't watch the NFL anymore because some of the politics, but I love those guys because of how they treat us.
Yeah.
Which
Have you seen Tom Brady walking around there?
No. Nah, man. So that's actually funny you say that. I went to school to become a personal trainer, exercise. Hold on, I'm spazzing. I went to school for personal training, corrective exercise, sports enhancement, and nutrition coaching. And while I was there, I met Tremaine Johnson.
He went to school with me.
He was number 22 for the Rams. He started with the Rams, and then I believe he retired at the Jets. And man, me and him are good friends now. I see him all the time. He's an amazing person. Like, that's the cool stuff. You know, a lot of times these NFL players get bad rap, but dude, these guys are really cool, especially when you get to sit down and talk to them. They're all tall as hell. Like, I'm 6'1", okay, and some of them make me feel like a tiny man. But yeah, I've never seen Tom Brady.
Not yet.
I got a quick question for you. This is Roland. How much do you work on your chairs as far as maintenance is concerned and repairs and things like that? All your chairs for the different sports? How is that handled?
So I have a technician out here. His name is Brian. I forget his last name. I just call him Brian, the wheelchair doctor.
Brian.
Yes.
Brian the brain.
Yeah. I break my chair regularly. He's so amazing. So for my sports chairs, I'm usually pretty good at not breaking those. The city has somebody for the football chairs, for our basketball chairs. I take them to Brian. My everyday chair, like the airport smashed my everyday chair, broke both of the bolts on the backrest that hold my backrest in place. So I took it to, like, I was about to fall out of it. I took it to Brian and he got it ghetto rigged, is a nice word. Yeah, he got a ghetto rig long enough for me to use it while we wait for the new chair to come. So that's another thing. If the airports have to replace what they break on your chairs.
Yeah. Yes, they do.
Yeah, I've done that a bunch of times as far as from a dealer standpoint. I've dealt with that before.
It's a problem.
It is. They put them under the airplane and, you know, sometimes you're sleeping, the pilot's doing barrel rolls, things get loose. But this one really smashed up my chair, broke both of my side guards and my backrest, just destroyed my backrest. And I called Brian up. I went to the airport. They're like, do you know who you want? Do you have anybody in mind? I said, yes, Brian. Brian works with the airport already. So I should have a new chair in 2 weeks. And this is the fastest turnaround time I've ever seen. But
that's unheard of.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Dude, so when it comes to my sports chairs, like, Brian knows when he's getting a phone call from me that he's going to be amazed because, like, I have a tendency of really breaking things when I break them.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I wonder how he's got you listed.
I do, too. I know. It's probably don't answer. Something's broken.
I got a couple of those.
What happened this time?
Dude, right? But he's really good with me, too, because, so, like, I've got a couple of other chairs that, you know, you accumulate chairs. One of the chairs that I have, there's a gentleman here who is kind of he's a new para, and he got shafted by his insurance. Somebody wrote something wrong, and they gave him a wheelchair, but it's one of those cheap Walmart hospital wheelchairs.
Yeah, that's a tragedy.
And they're trying to say that, like, he's not eligible for one for 5 years because they only do it every 5 years. So one of my old chairs, it's a little bit broken up. Me and Brian are going to get down to it, give it a lot of love, and I'm going to donate it to him.
Yeah.
So that's why I said,
I think, you know, Jody, I think that's it's a different category of wheelchair that they gave him. So, like, if a therapist could prove, a doctor could prove that he qualifies for that K5, which is the type of chair you're in, it can be done because it's not the same thing. One's a rental and one is a purchase. So Ridge.
And that's what I told him. I told him he needed to fight it, but he also doesn't have a lot of money too, because Medicare and Medicaid might pay for all of it, but I know Medicare only pays 80%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True. Gotcha.
True.
Yeah. And so some of these chairs get really pricey.
Yeah.
Yep. So I keep wipes to go and a sandwich bag with rubber gloves in my backpack at all times. That's a good question. So I do, like, when I got to go fly to, when I got to go fly to Kansas City, I know they're going to make us be there at 4 or 5 a.m. So the week before that, and even with, so I'll give you that example and then I'll tell you what I did for England. So the week before I go to Kansas City, I'm going to start waking up earlier and earlier every morning. So that way I'm on the toilet right around 3:30, 4 a.m. So I got time to get to the airport when the day that I fly out comes. And that helps out a lot. So that way when I am over there and I got an 8 a.m. game, my body is already programmed to go extra amount of hours early. So when I went to England, they're 8 hours ahead of us. So what I did was I started that process, but 3 days before I flew out, I stopped eating. And I cleared my system out, because I'll be damned if I poop myself on an airplane, okay? That is like my biggest fear. So I didn't eat 3 days before. And then when I got on the plane, I started eating. And that allowed me to set my bowel program to England's schedule.
Very interesting. Yeah. That's very interesting, Jody.
Yeah, even if it's a day or two, you know, it throws you off. You can feel it. You're not right. It's just off. You probably didn't have a good bowel program. Like, it just kind of messes you up.
Well, when I was there, it wasn't so bad. But ever since I've been back, like, I haven't been able to go in the mornings. I'll end up going like right around 3 or 4 in the afternoon. And that's right when I'm really busy doing sports or training or, you know, with my kid. So like, I have to reset. I'm going to have to do something to reset my system again. So it'll probably be a day or two of not eating, flushing my system, not taking any, and then a day of not taking any of the, because I have to take Senna to help me go to the bathroom in the morning.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll do a day where I don't take any Senna, and then I'll eat, and that'll help. That'll reset my schedule. So the next night, and then that night I'll take the Senna and wake up really early in the morning, and then I should have my schedule reset.
Yeah. Just those things that you have to think about.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Other people don't think about that, but yeah, it's just things that we have to schedule around and think about and think way ahead in advance. That's what we're going to be doing. So we don't have those problems.
Well, that and what you eat too. So like, you know, I've been home, I lost 25 pounds for this fight. So when I came home, I ate up an entire box of donuts to myself. I had the top ramen that I didn't get to eat. I pigged out on sushi. And my body was not prepared for that.
Yeah.
So you got to think about those kind of things too. What are you putting in there? What is your body used to eating? What is it used to processing? And if you make it go crazy like that, then you're going to have to reset everything. And then you touched on a very valid point. Like a lot of my girl, you know, when we first got together, I do a thing where like I break everything down to you. My struggles to her, I broke it all down. I said, are you sure you wanted a date? And she said, absolutely. And now she deals with this. But able-bodied people don't get it. You know, if I don't, like, sometimes if I don't go to the bathroom in the morning, and I can kind of tell when I need to go number one and number two nowadays, so I'm lucky in that case. But if I don't do my bowel program in the morning, I'd try not to leave my house because I don't want to have an accident when I'm gone.
Yeah. I mean, there'll be times where just like a day I just don't, and I'm at work and like, I just relax. Hopefully nothing happens, and nothing's ever like that happened, but it's a worry that's in the back of your mind. That one day it's just, we just missed your bowel program or for whatever reason, something you ate, something you might have been sick, whatever it was. And it just kind of throws you off and you're just irritated all day. It's just, you're not yourself. It's just, you're just worried.
You are. And that sucks too. So I got like 12 years. I never passed the bathroom and I never trust a fart.
Jody, tell us the story, how you became champion.
So, I started playing football a few years ago, and I've been looking for a boxing, some sort of boxing program, some sort of fighting program. And my football coach, Bob Murray, dude, he's the best, like very understanding. You know, he's able body. He doesn't treat me like I'm handicapped or any of us like we are handicapped, but he knows our struggles. So he's very understanding, and he's really good about that. I give a lot of credit to Coach Bob Murray. I sat down and had a conversation with him when I first started football. I told him, I said, look, I love football. I grew up playing football. I'll play for you. But understand that if I get an opportunity to do boxing, I may have to put football on the back burner, you know. And he said, absolutely. He supports me 100% in that. And, you know, I played football with him for a year. And then I told him, I'm like, hey, I have an opportunity to go to Portugal to put on a showcase of wheelchair boxing. It's the first ever tournament. And we don't have a boxing coach. And Coach Bob was like, well, I know you're probably going to put football off. Do you need a boxing coach? I said, we do. And he's like, I've never coached before, but I can try to do my best. And, you know, when we were going through Portugal, he helped out a lot. And then we found another coach, but that we couldn't raise the funds to go there. And so I missed going out to Portugal and fighting in Portugal. And the gentleman, Colin, he's the president of the World Adaptive Boxing Council. He reached out to me in last February. Dude, I couldn't say my R's till like high school. So that still catches up to me sometimes. So Colin reached out to me last February and it's like, hey, you missed Portugal. I got a Frenchman that wants to fight for the title. Do you want to come in to England and fight for it? I was like, wait, you're giving me a title shot? He's like, absolutely. Actually, at first I was fighting the English heavyweight. His name was Rick McInnes, but he ended up passing away. Yeah, so me and Rick were actually buddies because I was supposed to fight him in Portugal, and then we just became friends. And he ended up passing away, and that's when they matched me with the Frenchman. But Colin said, do you want to come? I said, absolutely, man. And then I went and I found Coach Heather Hernandez. I'm so glad that I found her. At the same time, sometimes this woman whoops my ass. Okay, I love her to death, and she's the sweetest, nicest person in the world, unless your name is Jody and you talk a lot of shit like I do. I had to run push six extra laps today because she kept baiting me into saying stupid shit. And then, like, when I say I'm pushing laps, it's 30 yards of turf. And if you guys have ever been on turf in a wheelchair with boxing gloves on, sucks. But I wouldn't trade her for the world, dude. I love her so much. She's an amazing coach. And awesome. Anybody who comes out, whoever wants to fight, she's my head coach with Team USA. She's going to be the head coach for Team USA. And you guys are going to be able to learn from her and understand how amazing her and Coach Chris are. Like, when it comes just fighting, and she's so quick to adapt. Like, it took probably about 2 weeks of me training with her for her to adapt to understanding my wheelchair needs. And
that's amazing.
Yeah. And then it took about another 2 weeks of me talking shit for her to quit caring about my wheelchair needs. Like, I'll give you, for instance, today. So I fight with a strap around my stomach to help keep me upright. And today, if you guys watch my fights, you'll hear her yelling at me a lot to pick up my effing hands. So now during training, that's what we do. And today it was 3 minutes of me punching 1-2s without dropping my hands. And like, I kept falling over. I'm like, coach, can I adjust myself? And she says, absolutely. If you want to run a lap. Yes, ma'am. Sorry. I need it. It's only going to better me.
Yeah. How do you feel like after a workout or even after a fight, right? Because, you know, I don't know how your sensation is around like your torso. If you take a shot there, like how does that feel or what's going on there? How do you manage any discomfort or pain that you may feel from that?
I deal with it.
So
when I got somebody to spar with me, they usually kind of take it easy around my midsection, but the belt that I use is kind of a thick padding. And that's another thing. So with wheelchair boxing paras and quads, we have a padded chest guard for safety. And then I don't use it personally because I have some sensation in my core, but one of the guys who I want to come out and box, he has a bullet behind his heart. So he is going to be mandatory for him to spar and fight with it on. And it's like, I think my coach has somebody has the video of it, but I put it on and my coach slugged me in the chest with it. It sounds worse than it. No, fuck that. It is bad. She beats up crippled. I swear that's the only reason why she wants to be my coach, so that way she can do it and it'd be okay. Yeah. I'm just kidding. I love her to death. But no, so she slugged me with it and I couldn't really feel it. Like, I felt the hit, like it felt like you were padding. Like if you can feel it, you can feel the vibration, but you don't feel the hit itself. You know what I mean? So that's part of the protective equipment that high level paras are going to use, or a special equipment for people who need it. You know what I mean? When it comes to like after the fight, directly after the fight, I was on cloud nine, high as hell off of adrenaline. So I didn't feel nothing. And then I was sick. I fought sick. So my brain wasn't all there anyways. But the next day, like my shoulders were killing me. The guy really didn't get a lot of hits on me. So it didn't hurt that bad. But after practice, when I'm sparring with some of these able-bodied guys, they go good on my midsection. But again, we're using 14 to 16 ounce gloves plus headgear plus my belt. It is, a quarter inch thick foam that helps keep me in the chair. So like we have a lot of protective equipment, so you don't really get hurt. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Jody, talk to me about the mentality of the Europeans towards adaptive sports. You said it's different compared to here in the States, correct?
Towards adaptive sports. So I'll say this, with England in general, they take really good care of their disabled people. Like, I guess they get a car. They even get a car over there if you're disabled. Yeah, a wheelchair accessible car. It's crazy. But when it comes to sports, those guys right now, the UK is really, really big on CTE and concussions and prevention of that. So those guys are like, they wanted me in headgear, chest gear, and I was able to talk my way out of that, thankfully. But I
bet you did.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Because I came to fight to get beat up. That's part of the passion for me. Every weightlifter, they say, dude, the afterburn where you're the next 2 days you're sore, but it's one of those enjoyable sores because you know you put in the work. It's the same for me in boxing. Like, I'm hurt, but I know I put in the work, so it's worth it. I earned this hurt. Gotcha. That's how I feel about it anyways. And them over there, like, they have one of the guys, his name's Danny, and he is he's mid-level para, but he's classed, the way they classified him, he wasn't able to be on the Olympic team. So they do rules a little bit different for adaptive sports. I actually have the rule book that I had. Colin, he gave me the rule book and he said, hey, I need you to Americanize this because their rules are a little bit different than ours here. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can see that. So what is your corner telling you before the fight? Or what are they telling you in between rounds? I mean, do you knock them out? I mean, how does the count go? I mean, how do you win?
So before the fight, my corner said, if you lose, we're leaving you here. But before the fight, my coaches did the most American thing, and I am so proud of them for this. One of the fighters from Africa, he came by himself, no coaches, no corner, no nothing. And when they found out that he didn't have anybody to warm him up, both of my coaches went, warmed him up, and they found out that he didn't have a corner. They got in and they cornered for him. They had his back. And me, that's one of those things that make you proud to be an American. Nobody else stood up to do that. Nobody else said, hey, you don't have anybody. Do you need somebody? Colin asked me, he's like, hey, can your coaches help him out? I said, absolutely. And as soon as they found out, they were right there, knowing that my fight was next. So they were there in his corner, cheering him on, coaching him, telling him what to do, and being amazing coaches to somebody they've never met before.
Right.
That's America right there. That is our countrymen. You know, we get a lot of flack around the world from being the world's police or getting into everybody else's business. But if you ask an American to help, every single one of us will drop everything we're doing to help you.
Yeah. Sounds like your coaches were warmed up, brother.
Oh yeah, they were. Dude, my coaches. Shoot, man. If you go and see the videos and on my Instagram, the pictures, like, and back to your question. So when we're in the corner, my coaches, you can hear what she's saying to me. She's going over what she wants me to do, how she wants me to move. And then, so for the rules of boxing is you land, if we're in the ring and you land four punches on me and I'm unable to stop them or block or anything, that's what they call a standing eight count. Okay. Automatic eight count. You get four standing eight counts before it's fight. So, and then when it comes to knockouts, before the fight, we have a meeting. The night before, we have a meeting with all of the coaches. And they go over all of the rules. And they say, guys, this is for points. You get 2 points for a headshot, 1 point for a body shot. Please do not knock each other out. If you do, you don't lose, but we're here to get points. In my corner, my coach is like, knock that motherfucker into tomorrow. And I'm thinking to myself,
that's American right there,
that's
man.
That's American right there. I felt that coming right now, dude. I felt that coming from you, Jody.
Absolutely. My coaches are all for it, man. They know that I'm going there to eat that man's lunch, all right? That's what I'm there for. And I wish. See, I'm so disappointed in myself, and this isn't an excuse. I'm just disappointed in myself. I was very, very, very sick. So when I was fighting, I was very slow. I was getting tired easy. And all of my friends that sparred with me, they will not let me live it down. One of my buddies, after football practice, he watched the video. He's like, what were you doing? I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, you're so slow. What are you, like, what happened? Rub it in, bro. Damn. But that's it. Like, you can hear my coaches. And, you know, it got to the point to my coaches are so good. It got to the point to where my coach saw that I wasn't, like, mentally, I wasn't focusing. And she would tell me, straight, over top, straight, hook, do a cross. And I did it. I went into, like, autopilot and just did everything she said the best I could.
Nice.
Except keep my hands up, apparently. So now I'm suffering. I'm paying for that. Okay. But I love it. I love it, dude. I love it. Even though I complain about it, man, I love the struggle. Today she whooped my ass. She would not let me put my hands down. I did 3 3-minute rounds of just punching the bag. 1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2 without putting my hands down. And it sucked. Boy, do I love it.
There you go.
Gonna feel that tomorrow.
I bet.
Yeah. Katie,
are you defending your title in, December, a couple of months? Is that what you're doing?
No. So in December, if I can raise the money up to go in December, it's going to be because they have two guys from Italy that want to fight, don't really know much about it. So it's an exhibition. Basically, Colin asked me to go out there and work with their heavyweights. I'm going to be doing 2 exhibition matches, from what I understand, with both of their heavies to kind of get them experience. So the way it works is I beat the Frenchman. Now there needs to be a challenger to the Frenchman. And if the Frenchman wins, then I fight the Frenchman again. But if the challenger wins, then I fight the challenger. And my goal is to have either, I don't know if we're going to be able to swing the championship. If they do another tournament over there where a challenger can fight the Frenchman, then next summer I want to do a tournament here where I'm defending the title.
Oh, love that. I love that.
Yeah. That's
can
the
you
goal.
Talk a little bit about the venues that these things happen at? And is it a ring? Or because I was thinking right now, boxing and ring. And
Yeah. So, it's so awesome. Colin, you can tell that this is a passion for him too. Because you know how like a regular boxing ring is usually about 3.5 feet off the ground? So our boxing ring is half that height. It's about 1.5 to 2 feet off the ground. And they have a lift. For me, because my wheelchair was wide, they had to take my tires off, push me onto the lift. I got lifted up to ring level. They lifted the ropes for me so I can go under the ropes, into the ring, dry, and then they put the ropes back on. That's how they said they designed the lift for wheelchair boxing and the ring. They have the ring at a lower height for us to get into it. And the only complaint I have about it is the pad that they have on the ring is super spongy. And the worst part about the entire fight was when the round ended and I had to push back to the corner. That was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. But yeah, so that's the ring. It is a boxing ring. And they wanted it to be as normal as possible. Right, so that way, that's the whole point. Is like, it's very inclusive and they want us to feel normal. You know what I mean? That's the whole goal of this is we want you, all of you guys, like especially our fighters, our basketball players, we want you to be as normal as you're normal. We want you to feel that way. We don't want you guys to feel like, oh, well, I can't climb in the ring like the normal guys do. No, we're going to set it up so you can.
A couple episodes back, we had Philip Bramwell on the show. He's a comedian with CP. It's a great episode. Y'all should check it out. But
absolutely.
We asked him if there was any accommodations that needed to be made when he took the stage, and he said no. And he made the comment that when he's doing his comedy and he's up there, and he doesn't feel disabled. He feels level. He feels at the same level with everybody else.
That's the magic of it. You know, when you're doing something you love, it evens the playing field.
Absolutely.
You know,
go ahead. Sorry, Jody. What else happened in London, bud? There's something else that personally happened in front of Big Ben.
Yeah. Absolutely. So I told you guys this yesterday, and I'm going to share it with you guys. Big Ben has been like, if you guys remember the old Sherlock Holmes cartoon with the mice, there was a scene in there where they were running through Big Ben and they were chasing the bad guy and the bad guy was chasing them. And ever since I was little and I saw that, I've been like totally infatuated with Big Ben. So me and my lady went out and she's such a doll, dude. She was so sick. So I was starting to get better. Monday, I stayed in when her and the coaches went out to check out London. I stayed in so I could try to get feeling better. And she ended up catching what I had. So Tuesday, she was like really down. She was on a bunch of cough medicine, but she was a champ. So we went out to check out Big Ben. We went down and we saw a Buckingham Palace and we walked through the garden where like they filmed 101 Dalmatians. It's a really big, beautiful park and garden. And we saw like a little gnome house. It was really pretty, super duper romantic, right? And we were walking back up to Big Ben and I proposed to her. It was, wow. Yeah, I proposed to my lady in front of Big Ben and she was on enough cough medicine and sick that she said yes, thankfully. Might have been part of my plan, maybe not. I'm not going to tell that for sure. You'll never know. Yeah. But, and then like, it was, oh my God, it was so perfect. So I proposed to her, she cried, we called our moms, and then it was really cloudy out. So Big Ben was pretty, but it was kind of dark. But after we got off the phone with our moms and we started walking, the clouds parted and the sun hit Big Ben and it shined like gold.
Nice.
It was like so beautiful. And then the 6 p.m. bells rang at Big Ben. And like, I started to tear up a little bit and I was just like, oh my God, this is a dream come true.
Yep.
Yeah. So and happy for you, brother.
Yep. Yeah, man. And so now me and my lady are engaged. It was super romantic. And yeah, everybody got mad at me because I was planning on doing it during Level Up, the video game, big video game expo that we have here in Vegas. Because we're both real big nerds, you know, anime, video games, all the good stuff. And so I was planning on doing it there. But like the whole experience and, you know, she had my back when I was sick, if I had an accident on myself, like if I had, because at one point I was starting to have a little diarrhea, dude, she jumped into action, never had an issue. I look at this woman and when I broke my back and I started to realize my situation, I would never, ever have imagined that I met a woman that could go through everything with me and still look at me with the love in her eyes that she did. And at that moment in front of Big Ben, I had to ask her to be my wife and my life partner.
Love it. So did you meet your fiance post-injury?
Yeah. So I actually met her on Facebook dating.
Are you listening, Danny?
You're
listening, yeah. Danny?
I'm on Facebook dating.
Oh, he's on Facebook
dating. Yeah, Facebook dating about 2 years ago.
It's a shit show. Yeah,
it is.
Yeah, it's a thing.
So like when you open up your Facebook app, you'll see a little heart in the top. That's the dating. Mm. So with her, I saw, I was on Facebook scrolling through, right? And then like, she had an anime girl as her character. So we started talking and, you know, I was worried that, at the like, I wanted to meet her quickly because I didn't want to like start getting feelings for her. And it was an anime girl on her, as her profile picture and like meeting her and it not be what I think it is, you know, catfished. So we've all been there, bro. Okay. So we meet up. And I take her to, it was a quick little date. We went to a casino, had a couple of drinks, and just kind of just spent the day talking. And she told me that, you know, she always lived a very sheltered life, always like didn't go out. She always stayed in and played video games. And, you know, all she does at the time was go to work and then go home and play video games. And she wants to, you know, make friends and go experience things. And I looked at her, I said, all right, well, let's be friends for now. Just know that you're going to be my girlfriend. And she looks at me, she's like, oh, really? I said, absolutely. I promise to never let you be bored again. And she's like, And I've done everything I can to keep that promise.
Yeah, just be yourself, man. You sound like a fantastic dude. Yeah.
I do my best, man. I do my best. My thing is God, okay?
There you go.
It's like,
amen, brother.
I am the best person I can be because I look at Jesus and I see the love that Jesus had for all of us. And I'm too human to have that amount, but I can do my best to get close to it.
Yeah, true. Jody, let's go. We're going to pretty much wrap up the show, but this is your time to tell us about, I know you're trying to raise money for boxing and
yes,
you have some GoFundMe's and you have you know, put your message out there. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So I do have a GoFundMe. It was for this last fight. I need to go in there and change some of the reword some things. So that way, so what I'm trying to do right now is I'm trying to build Team USA so that way we can go and dominate. I need five. I'm trying to get 5 to 8 more fighters that want to travel the world and beat up foreigners. I'm just kidding. Mostly, but
yeah, mostly.
I love you, honey. Have a great day. Okay. All right. Bye. Have a good night. Thank you. So we're trying to raise money right now through the WABC and A. So the nonprofit out of England is called ASI, Adaptive Sports Integrated. And we're going to be WABC, World Adaptive Boxing Council USA. I'm looking for fighters and I need sponsors because, you know, grants and everything, it's hard with this sport because this is a combat sport. But if anybody wants to join, please contact me on Facebook, Instagram. I don't really have anything. I think I have a TikTok. I have a TikTok. So you guys can contact me. Yeah. So they can contact me on TikTok. If you guys, and I'm going to talk directly to your listeners if you don't mind.
Sure.
Yes, go for it.
If you guys have a passion for fighting, if you guys have a passion for sports, or maybe you've never had the passion, but you want to find something in your life that you can work towards and feel accomplished and have the chance and ability to do great things, whether the whole world thinks it's great or not, it is. And you want the ability, you want the opportunity to do something great, you can. And I urge you to do it. Reach out to me for fight for boxing or wherever you guys are located. Look at your local sports, wheelchair sports, adaptive sports. There's so many great things. Right now, if you guys come and join, I want to get a tryout competition together where you guys can come and spar with other disabled men and women and fight for your opportunity to travel the world and fight for a heavyweight belt. When it comes to football, basketball, rugby, all of these sports, a Google search will help you. Just Google wheelchair sports in whatever city you're in and join them. Because at the end of the day, the exercise you're going to get is amazing. You know that. You know, the feeling you get from competing on a team, awesome. But the friends that you're going to make, of people that are in your situation, maybe less time, maybe longer, the things you're going to learn from the people around you are going to help you for the rest of your life. And the friends that you make, I met a gentleman in basketball. He's going to be the best man at my wedding. He's in a wheelchair also. I love him to death. The friends you make from this community, you're not alone. Come join us. Even if you just join us to work out, come out and join us and do something. Be great. But if there's any sponsors out there, guys, please get a hold of me. I'm trying to build a team. And my goal with this and the sports chair that I'm trying to bring to market is so that way there's no athlete ever being denied doing their sport because of funding. With Southern Nevada Adaptive Sports Foundation, we are a very small foundation. We had very little money this year, and we were able to sponsor 3 athletes to go try out for handball. You know, that's the goal. That's the dream. With UABC USA, whatever money we can get is going to go for disabled athletes to follow their dreams. Boxing, it's going to be more than just boxing because we're going to do rugby on grass. I know quad rugby is like coveted in this country. You guys are very, very mean about us pairs trying to join. But we're going to have rugby on grass. And then they, with these chairs, they've designed an apparatus that when you're pushing, you can hit a button and it kicks a soccer ball for you. We're trying to get those brought to market. If wow. I can get those chairs sold here and like actually being manufactured and sold, then I can put the money back into it. So no athlete ever needs to struggle to get money again. That's fantastic. That is my goal.
Wow. Where can they find you, Jody? What is your Instagram handle and what's your Facebook handle?
So my Insta.
What's your email also?
Okay. So my email is BennettFitt, BennettFitt at hotmail.com. I chose it because it's my last name and it sounds really cool. Like Bennett Fit You, right?
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
That's rolling.
I'm telling you. I try to be clever sometimes. And then my Instagram is AKA_Captain, CAPTAIN_amazing. That's my Facebook handle. And then, or no, that's my Instagram handle. And then my Facebook handle is, I believe it's just my name. Let me see. I am not the best when it comes to social medias. Yeah, I try. Neither. Yeah. Yeah. It's just Jody awesome. Bennett.
Isn't that picture, is that what you were in the helmet and the wheelchair? Is that your profile pic?
No, my profile pic is right now. My profile pic is me and my 2 coaches and I'm throwing a punch.
You there?
And then
I remember now.
Yeah, and then my wallpaper, I think is what they call it, is me and my two other linemen just sitting there shooting the breeze at a football tournament.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah,
Danny, Roland, you got anything for Jody?
Amazing story, Jody. Yeah. Such thoughtful thoughts. I loved it.
Yeah,
great story.
Thank you guys for letting me air it.
Look forward to doing this again. Whenever you have an event that's happening, you can certainly come on and talk about it.
Well, not only that, guys, I would love for you guys to come out and meet the team whenever we're doing events. You know what I mean? I don't know if we're going to have any home tournaments this year for football. And we for basketball, we weren't able to raise the money for a season this year. So we are going to have to push off our season till next year. But if you guys are in Kansas City, y'all come out Kansas City and interview. I recommend you guys coming and checking that out anyways.
Yeah.
One of those tournaments. Yeah. I think because Dallas. I think
some of our plan. Go ahead.
Dallas is going to be there. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah. We can hear.
Yeah. I believe that there might be a tournament in Dallas. But guys, come out and talk to us. Come check it out. See what it's about. And, you know, interview some of us. These guys would love to talk to you. It's. What you guys are doing really impresses the hell out of me because I've always wanted to do something like this. I've just never had the guts to do it. So, I know you could probably inspire a lot of these other guys to do this stuff too. I'm so big on our community and trying to inspire our community to do anything and great things. You know, it's scary because a lot of times people look at each other with jealousy. Like they want to see you do good, but they're jealous when you do. But in our community, you don't see a lot of that. It's just a lot of it's pure and it's amazing.
Yeah, there's an authenticity to the community.
100%. Well, Mr. Jody Bennett, it's a pleasure to meet you.
Yeah. We want you to hang on after we close the show.
Yeah.
Just for a 2-minute little
talk. Yeah. Okay. So before we close the show, I would just want to go over some numbers, you know, for people that have been on our show. So our episode number one has 97 views, downloads. Danny, you've got 133 downloads. Mario has 49 downloads. Victoria's at 114 downloads. Sean Simmons at 65. Dr. Kyrell's at 98. Finding Freedom and Laughter with Philip, he's at 25. Britt Seitz, 25. And Dr. Bramwell is at 31.
Nice.
We have over 120 cities that are listening to us, and we're in 7 countries. Pretty cool, huh?
It is pretty cool.
Congratulations, guys.
And also thank you to Town Place Suites by Marriott for sponsoring this show. They've been kind enough to put us on the fourth or fifth floor?
Fifth floor.
In the conference room with a big screen in the back, tables.
Come downstairs to Ignite the bar, get some drinks.
Yeah, that's going to be you, bud. We're gonna get Danny Litton, then press record, see what happens.
Dude, what's the worst that can happen? I'm going to fall off my chair. It's not that far from the floor.
Hey, you got
just do me a favor. Turn into a fire truck.
Yeah, get into a fight. I'm going to – don't put that video up, dude. It's going to be ugly.
No,
which one? You kick some of that?
Thomas the Train style, dude. I can do that.
Yeah, there you go. Well, we want you to stick around after this. We're really happy, like we said. So you got anything else, guys? We're good?
We're good.
We're good.
All right, well, coming to you from the Town Place Marriott Suites. This is the Wheelchair Roundtable, and we'll catch you next time. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.